Concert artist, composer, and violinist Daniel Bernard Rumain is appearing on Saturday, April 11th with the WCF Symphony. He stopped by Iowa Public Radio Studio One armed with his violin.
This is Hip Hop Study in Etude in C Sharp Minor. Hope you dig it.
Daniel Bernard Rumain performing the Hip Hop Study and Etude in C Sharp Minor. We're very fortunate to have violinist and the WCF Symphony's 2015 composer in residence, Daniel Bernard Rumain, performing for us today in Iowa Public Radio Studio One. Welcome and thank you for joining IPR. It's wonderful to have you here today, Daniel.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here. You have a beautiful, beautiful control room here that I'm in, and I'm so excited to be able to play for you live today.
Well, Daniel is in Iowa for a performance with the WCF Symphony for their Rediscover concert this Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m., April 11th at UNI's Gallagher Bluedorn Performing Arts Center. And he also came last month to the state to present educational outreach programs. Good afternoon. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum, and we're broadcasting from Iowa Public Radio Studio One on the University of Northern Iowa campus in Cedar Falls. This is Iowa Public Radio's Classical Music in the Afternoon. Kurt Snook is letting us hold up Studio One. IPR's Phil Moss is engineering this afternoon so that we can get the inside scoop on Daniel, plus gently twist his arm to play a few more things for us this afternoon. Well, Daniel, tell us a little bit about this piece that you just played.
That was Hip Hop Study and Etude in C Sharp Minor. I wrote it when I first moved to New York City, to Harlem, in 1998. I was teaching at the Harlem School of the Arts, and many of the young people there were not necessarily interested in Bach or Beethoven or Debussy or Stravinsky or even Ellington or Simone. They loved Beyonce and Drake and Rihanna, and I do too. But I had to find a way to honor the history of classical music as well as honor the history of hip-hop music. To me, they're both important. To me, they're equal. To me, they both reflect culture, language, the best of us. So Hip Hop Studies and Etude, in its name, in everything that it's wanting to be and represent, is an amalgam. It's a combination of studies that happen in classical music and studies that I think happen in hip hop music. It's a composer's response to hip hop music. And just like Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier, just like Debussy's Preludes, just like Beethoven's Piano Sonatas, I've written these pieces in a systematic way. There's one in each key, both major and minor, and the one that I played was in C-sharp minor. They're also each subtitled. So Hip Hop Study and Etude in C-sharp minor is subtitled Armstrong for Louis Armstrong. The music is trying to evoke something that you might hear from the 1950s played on a trumpet.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small town called Margate, Florida. Not Fort Lauderdale, not Pompano Beach, not Miami. It was Margate. The names tell us something. It wasn't a cool place. At least I did not realize how cool it was. Margate, small town and a suburb of Pompano Beach in South Florida. But I was lucky to be there. We had great public schools in the 1970s. They were great because in every one of those public schools, there was an orchestra. And in those orchestras were young people, just like me, 5, 6, 7 years old, 10 years old, playing instruments. And it was my first introduction to the orchestra, my first introduction to the performing arts. You know, our cafeteria was also our gym. It was also our performing arts center. And the Margate Strings, as we were known back then, well, we were soldiers. You know, we were part of a battalion with our weapons of choice, which were our instruments. They belonged to us. You know, you got an instrument, you got a private lesson once a week, and you were part of something free. It was a small part of your total education. I have a 5-year-old son now. If I send him to Margate Elementary School, he would not be given a violin. He wouldn't get that lesson once a week. He'd be part of nothing. And, you know, that's the big change. So coming from Margate was actually a great gift, because if I was in New York, if I was in Chicago, who knows what would have happened. But I'd like to say, I like to remind myself even, yes, I'm from Margate, Florida. And of course, I'm saying it, and I'm saying it in that way because I hope your listeners are thinking about where they come from. Do they have pride in it, a sense of purpose, place? You know, I love being here in Cedar Falls. I love being here in Waterloo. It reminds me of those very special kind of sacred places.
When did you start composing?
Well, I started playing violin when I was 5 years old. First piece I ever played publicly was Hatikva. I started composing when I was about 10 years old. I remember I was walking home from school, had an epiphany, this strong melody, and more importantly, this strong need to write it down. I didn't really know how to do that. I didn't know how to notate, you know, my own music, my own thoughts, but I kind of found a way, and I gave it to my teacher. And that was the beginning. That was an important moment. And she was so great about it. I remember Miss Hieronymus. She was so wonderful and so caring. And she made a big deal about that moment. She made a big deal about it, you know, and I appreciate that. I remember that.
So where did you go to school and how did your career kick off?
Well, you know, I went to public school. I went to a performing arts high school, Dillard High School of the Arts in South Florida. I auditioned for Juilliard and Manhattan School of Music. I mean, that was where I wanted to go, and I got in, but I couldn't afford it. So I ended up going to Vanderbilt University, which was another great gift, this great liberal arts university in the South, in Nashville, very small, maybe 15,000 students, I think. It was a very small school of music in the Blair School of Music, but it was an important time. You know, I was one of maybe half a dozen composers, and to be blunt and obvious and clear with your listeners, I was the only Haitian-American composer. I was the only African-American student in the School of Music, and I was one of very few black students on the campus at that time. This was 1990. But the university at the time was on its own mission, one that a lot of American universities were addressing, this notion of diversity, this notion of sexual identity, this notion of representing the entire world. A great international school and a great sense of both the city and the university wanting to embrace and change. I only say that because as a composer, being at that school, I was able to, for example, write a piece called Haitian Essay based on my own Haitian ancestry. And the university not only helped to support that work, commissioning it, but they performed it. And that was a really important part of my kind of evolution as an artist and as a composer.
And then you ended up at the University of Michigan?
I did. I had a teacher at Vanderbilt that went to the University of Michigan, studied with Bill Balcom, great American composer. I ended up studying with Bill Balcom and William Albright and a few others. And, you know, University of Michigan in Ann Arbor is a very eclectic place. And that was also a good place for me to be at that time because through Ann Arbor, I found my way to New York City and Harlem in 1998.
And in 2000, you made your Carnegie Hall debut, so tell us about that.
Yes, well, that was with the American Composers Orchestra. I won the Whitaker Fellowship and Commission a whole series of programs. You know, it's Carnegie Hall, from the Beatles to Stravinsky, right? From Sarah Vaughan to Maya Angelou, from Philip Glass, of course, to John Adams, to Nina Simone. I mean, you step out onto the stage of Carnegie Hall, and there is these kind of apparitions, you know, this feeling. It's a very, very special place.
Well, how about playing another piece for us and tell us a little bit about this work you're going to play?
Yes, it's a piece called Cathedral. I wrote it for the great American dancer Peter Sparling, who was a principal in the Martha Graham Dance Company. Peter was the head of the dance department at the University of Michigan, and I started playing piano there. You know, so much of my life has to do with working with dancers. It started with Peter Sparling. He introduced me to Pearl Lang in New York City. Pearl Lang was the last great Graham dancer. She took over for Miss Graham when Miss Graham was forced out of her company. So I started playing for Pearl when I moved to New York City in 1998. Peter Sparling arranged that, and that was very important. I did that for 4 years. And through that affiliation, I met Arthur Mitchell, the head of Dance Theater of Harlem. I met Miss Jamison, Janice Jamison, the head of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. And I eventually met Bill T. Jones, who I'm still working with. I was music director and composer for many years, and now he's directing an opera that I'm writing for Opera Philadelphia. All of this to say that from John Cage to Merce Cunningham, from Aaron Copland to Martha Graham, the 20th and 21st century is really marked by this period of composers and choreographers creating new genres, creating new work together. You could argue between Stravinsky and Ballet Russe, there was a real kinship, a real importance put on the creation of new work, new music to support new adventurous dance. So Cathedral is music for dance. I had a teacher once tell me that all Mozart, all of his music is operatic. And what he's getting at is this notion that a theme is a character. And Mozart introduces his themes in a way that evokes a character from an opera, in a way that evokes song, singing. I think for my music, I'm always trying to evoke movement, dance, probably a part of my Haitian culture. But I also think it's something a little deeper and more profound, in that I've had wonderful opportunities to work with wonderful dancers and choreographers who I see as wonderful music teachers as well. So Cathedral was a piece written for Peter, and he danced solo to that piece as I played it. So let me play Cathedral for you. I hope you dig it.
Thank you.
Daniel Rumain performing The Cathedral. And thank you so much. That was wonderful. We're broadcasting from Iowa Public Radio Studio 1 on the UNI campus, and we're very fortunate to have violinist and the WCF Symphony's 2015 composer-in-residence, Daniel Bernard Rumain, performing for us today in Iowa Public Radio Studio 1. Now, you're going to be performing the Woodbox Violin Concerto. Tell us a bit about this magnificent new work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You don't often hear magnificent and new work in the same sentence, so I appreciate that. It was a commission from the Boston Pops Orchestra and Keith Lockhart directly. Woodbox Violin Concerto is a term of endearment I have for my violin, a wood box. And it's in two movements. The first movement is pretty angular and atonal. And aggressive and funky, I'd say. The second movement's very lyrical and symmetrical, tonal, and less than funky, a little more soulful. But it's a work that I wrote for me. And I'm really exploring the sounds that I would like to hear from the instrument that I don't always hear from the instrument. I'm using a musical vernacular. By that I mean I'm using what Gunther Schuller might call a kind of a third stream music, a combination of jazz and funk, and in my case, hip-hop and rock, which in that way is kind of shares a kinship with Mendelssohn's concerto, violin concerto, first movement. The second part of my concerto begins with a synthesizer, you know, kind of abruptly, and has a kind of a futuristic sound to it. And I did that because I wanted to turn a hard angle, you know, really draw attention to the fact that we're going to a different place, a different world. And it was wonderful to premiere the piece in a Boston Symphony Hall, which is historic, with Keith Lockhart and, of course, the legendary musicians of the Boston Symphony. It was part of their 125-year anniversary celebrations at the time, which is really great.
Well, you in this Woodbox Violin Concerto like to do things, well, I think in most of your compositions with contrast.
Yes.
As far as like using your instruments, so demonstrate some of the contrasts where you have maybe the more percussive sounds and then more lyrical sounds.
Sure. Everything that I'm doing actually has a tradition within classical music, and those are called extended techniques. As a violinist, I was interested in extending the natural techniques of the instrument. How could I take pizzicato sounds, collegno sounds, playing with the bow, vibrato even, how could I extend those techniques and by extending them, make them my own? So what I'll do is I'll kind of play the traditional sound that you might hear. Let's start with vibrato, for example. So here's just a traditional type of vibrato sound. And here's the same passage with a wild vibrato. Here's a pizzicato. And here's my pizzicato, which I'm really thinking about bass. And that's different, just to, you know, for your listeners who'll appreciate this. The Bartok pits has a particular sound and technique. But I'm also thinking about, quite frankly, Sade and what I would call a sul ponticello pizzicato, where I'm using my fingers, playing the violin like a guitar, and I'm doing pizzicato really, really close to the bridge. Gives it a completely different sound, kind of like a guitar, kind of like a muted guitar. Another thing I'm exploring is other instruments influencing my playing. So what a DJ does using records and a turntable. also thinking about electric guitar. I'm thinking about percussion. How can I make my violin emulate the sounds of different types of drums, bongos, congas, you name it. And of course, introducing my voice, playing and singing at the same time. I remember being about 10 years old and hearing George Benson doing the song Broadway. And at the end of it, he would improvise these scatting sounds in perfect pitch and time with his guitar. And I wanted to find a way to kind of do that. So this is all a way to make, in some ways, the violin not sound like a violin, but in other ways, to make the violin my violin. And there's a difference.
No instruments were injured in that wonderful demonstration. Give us another work, maybe something that employs some of these techniques.
Oh, I'd love to play a kind of staple from my repertoire. It's a piece called Filter. I call it Filter because violinists essentially have three places where they can place the bow on the string. Sul tasto, which is over the fingerboard. The normal position, which is between the bridge and the fingerboard. That's kind of the golden spot. It's where the oscillation of the string is most kind of perfect. It's really the tone, the soul of an instrument. And then there's sul ponticello, near or in some cases even on the bridge. But I always thought about, well, what would happen if I moved my bow continuously in between these three areas? And I started realizing it sounded like a wah-wah pedal. A wah-wah pedal is nothing more than a filtering device between high and low pass frequencies. It reinforces certain frequencies and it lessens others. So I call it filtering in that actually what's happening in a very similar sense is that I'm reinforcing and getting rid of certain frequencies of the string as I play. It gives it a very interesting, almost electric-like sound. And it's a kind of a difficult technique because you're both playing horizontally and in some ways vertically at the same time along the string. And I wrote a whole concerto, if you will. Voodoo Violin Concerto uses the technique of filtering. But this is the first piece I ever wrote using this technique, and I simply called it Filter. And I like to say that I'm emulating and in some ways imitating those great Italian caprices by Paganini. And at the same time, I'm emulating the great guitar playing of Prince, the great American composer and guitarist. So this is Filter. I hope you dig it. I'm gonna go to bed.
Daniel Romaine, okay, performing Filter. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
We're broadcasting from Iowa Public Radio Studio 1 on the UNI campus, and Daniel is in Iowa for a performance with the WCF Symphony for their Rediscover concert this Saturday evening at 7:30 at UNI's Gallagher Blue Dorn. And he also came last month at the state to present a host of educational outreach programs. And Daniel, you are going to be doing a world premiere with the WCF Symphony. So tell us about that work.
Oh, thank you so much for asking. This is a piece called A Young Person's GPS for Our Orchestra, subtitled Theme and Variations on Two Haitian Folk Songs. And it's a direct response to Benjamin Britten's great work for young people, A Young Composer's Guide to the Orchestra, which is also subtitled Variations on a Theme by Henry Purcell. But the point of us is that Benjamin Britten was invited by radio and television station to compose a piece that would really kind of demonstrate everything that the various sections and instruments of the orchestra could do. I've always wanted to update that piece and update it in a way that made sense to my 5-year-old son and other young people. And Jason Weinberger and the wonderful musicians of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony Orchestra were game and were willing to commission the work. It's a piece that employs two Haitian folk songs. These are fisherman songs, Merci Bon Dieu and Soufflez Vent, Thank You God and Blow Wind Blow, that my father and my mother used to sing to me. And I've taken those two Haitian folk songs and created 15 variations on them. Each variation explores a different aspect of the orchestra, from the solo piccolo to the double basses, from the timpani and the percussion to just the violins, and to the harp, of course. We should never forget about the harp. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity, and it is a world premiere, and I'm glad I'm doing it here, because when I first encountered the orchestra, to me it wasn't just a collection of musicians, they were heroes. They were superheroes. They were gods playing these miraculous instruments I could not understand then and now, how so many people from so many different places could come together and make one thing so wonderful. And a young person's GPS, shorthand for a global positioning system, is actually speaking to the world. It's speaking to the notion for me that the orchestral concert hall stage may be the last bastion of democracy where all voices can and should be heard. So it's not just the piccolo, but it's the person behind it. It's her story, her ethnicity, her culture, her family, her friends, her relationship to her instrument and the orchestra and the community, and her relationship to the world. And that's one of the things that I think is inherent in the orchestral experience. You know, you come into a communal space, you sit down next to someone, oftentimes that you don't know, and you adhere to and you embrace sometimes something new and wonderful and exciting and revelatory. All of that to say that a young person's GPS for our orchestra is very carefully and systematically, both in its title and in its contrapuntal nature of its music, trying to bring together the world, not as it is, but the world as I would like it to be.
We're broadcasting from Iowa Public Radio Studio 1 on the UNI campus, and it's been awe-inspiring to have violinist and the WCF Symphony's 2015 Composer-in-Residence Daniel Bernard remain with us today. And Daniel is in Iowa for a performance of the WCF Symphony for the Rediscover Concert. That's this Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. at UNI's Gallagher Blue Dorn. And thank you so much for coming today. This has just been terrific to have you here.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much. I know I give big answers, but I just wanted to say how inspiring it is for me from New York City, right, quote unquote, to come here and be reminded of, well, you know, the center of the earth, the center of the planet is wherever you decide it to be. And for me right now, it's Waterloo and Cedar Falls.
To find out more details on Daniel Bernard Roumain, please see danielroumain.com, and that's Daniel, R-O-U-M-A-I-N.com. And to get more information about Saturday evening's concert and also get tickets, go to their website at wcfsymphony.org. And along with Daniel's Woodbox Violin Concerto and his world premiere, the symphony will also be performing Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, Barber's Adagio for Strings, Joan Tower's Fanfare for the Uncommon Woman, and Variations on America by Charles Ives. We've had an amazing afternoon with composer and violinist Daniel Bernard Roumain. And program thanks comes because he was here today in our studios. And also thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Phil Moss, Nick Carlos, Stacia Fortunes, and Al Scherz. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum, and we've had the great honor of presenting just a small portion of new compositions by Daniel here on Iowa Public Radio Classical. Thanks for listening.